is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services, Tuesday, February the 11th, and we're having our information meeting, which continued from yesterday, that we didn't quite get completed, and hopefully we will get worked through the agenda today. And if my committee members hear me, those of you that are over in the House and those of you that are in the Senate, we have convened, and we're looking forward to your sitting here. I would like to now talk about the pig that's sitting there in front of you. There's a special reason why the pig is there. We have become so accustomed in our course of work that we use so many acronyms and so much alphabet soup that it's a way of collecting revenue from individuals who are both the speakers as well as the legislators, that when you use acronyms, we would like for you to contribute to the pig. The donation then will be will turn over to the Oregon Food Bank to feed the hungry. So it goes for a worthy cause, and it also makes us cautious of when we're using acronyms that maybe other people don't understand. So with that, welcome. I know that Donna is here again. Is Dan Murphy going to join you?
Senator Winters, Jan Calvin is here, and she will be making the presentation.
Okay. Well, you may proceed.
Senator Winters, members of the committee, again for the record, my name is Donna Middleton. I'm the director of the State Commission on Children and Families. And the first thing on the agenda is to finish up our informational meeting that we had yesterday. And so I'm going to ask Jan Calvin to come up, and she's going to present the future, what comprehensive planning is going to look like from this day forward, if you will. And then I'm going to present, because Barb Somoglio could not return today, I'm going to present the work plan for the state agencies.
Thank you.
Chairperson Winters, committee members, I'm Jan Calvin. I'm the vice chair of the Marion County Children and Families Commission. Pleased to be with you today. I suppose I'm the one that's supposed to hold the crystal ball. And that's not an acronym. I will be happy to contribute to the pig along the way. When Marion County experienced its comprehensive planning process, what we have experienced is a very powerful thing that transforms us as we move through it. So we talk about change and transforming community. We're willing to be transformed as well as systems and as individuals. And one of the differences between an action plan and a work or action plan and a comprehensive plan is, they say in an action plan you're supposed to plan the work and then work the plan. Indeed, in a comprehensive plan you shape the plan, then the plan shapes you. So what we are moving forward into the future is different ways of working, different ways of integrating, different ways of achieving the outcomes. Some examples of that, the Marion County Board of Commissioners just released 12 goals to guide their departments. Two of those goals are specifically tied to the comprehensive plan. That has never been done before. Moreover, the coordinated comprehensive plan for children and families is now an integral part of the whole county's vision, goals, and operations. It is obviously part of the commission's goals and operations, and it is directing the 2003-2005 strategic investments. And along the way, the partnerships that I'd like to highlight are some things that we're looking forward to. So when we look at the future, it's because of the comprehensive plan that we've built these partnerships. More people are able to apply their resources, their work, and their attention to the types of outcomes we need to see in Marion County. So I'll be inviting a couple people. They'll be making very brief statements to give you an idea of what the future may look like for us from the comprehensive plan. First, I'd like to invite Cynthia Risen. She's the director of the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium at Chemeketa Community College and a key partner with our Marion County Children and Families Commission. Our work with together with the Mid-Willamette Valley Education Consortium to develop the comp plan led to joint determination to offer more opportunities to youth in the areas specifically of education, employment, social development, and life skills. And I'd like Cynthia to highlight what we'll be doing there in the near future.
Welcome, Cynthia.
Chair Senator Winters, my name is Cynthia Risen. I'm the director of the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium, and I'm housed at Chemeketa Community College. During the Phase 2 process that Jan described of developing the Coordinated Comprehensive Plan for Children and Families in Marion County, several stakeholder groups came to the table to talk about how to leverage our resources and additional resources through that planning process. Specifically, a key strategy was around improving communication and connectivity among stakeholders who are committed to positive youth development. The Mid-Willamette Education Consortium represents some of those key stakeholders to help us create that system around positive youth development. Specifically, there were three components that were arranged through a memorandum of understanding between the Marion County Children and Families Commission and the Mid-Willamette Education Consortium. The first one is around a youth information system. We want youth to be able to create a youth information system that will be web-based and will link them to vital information and resources to make healthy decisions. The second outcome of that memorandum of understanding is around professional development for the professionals that work in the positive youth development arena. It states youth professionals are organizing on a quarterly meeting networking basis and participating in training forums to improve their understanding of current research and practice. The third outcome of that memorandum of understanding is around the planning groups that already exist in Marion County. We've organized it around the Salem-Kaiser area, North Marion, and South Marion, and allowing the opportunity for those kind of sub-regional alliances in the Salem-Kaiser area, North Marion County, and South Marion County area to create stronger links with business community and community organizations to bring more community resources to bear on positive youth development. These things, those three items that I mentioned, help us integrate the academic and workforce preparation components for youth in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties.
Thank you, Cynthia. Are there any questions of Cynthia on that one example? I'd be happy to move forward then. I'd like to invite next Sam Skillern, who's the Executive Director of the Salem Leadership Foundation. One of the many, many things that Sam helps our community do is to bring together people of faith and people of goodwill to work together in a truly integrated way, bring more resources to bear, and this is directly attached to some of the outcome objectives for our comprehensive plan.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, good day to you. Great to be here. As Jan said, I'm the director of the Salem Leadership Foundation. This isn't an acronym, I hope, yet we're a faith-based community development organization. If I said the word FBO, I guess I'd get fined.
That's true.
Faith-based community development organization. We've been very active for the last 7 years, working all across our community to bridge the faith community with the rest of the community for the benefit of kids, families, and neighborhoods. With regard to the Marion County Children and Families Commission, and indeed the whole county, the Board of Commissioners and the Sheriff and many of the departments, but specifically the Children and Families Commission, we've been very active, not just asking them to become a partner, but watching them ask us to be partners. So it's truly a two-way street between government and the faith community in terms of not only communication, but now active projects. The one that I'm here to talk about today is called church-based neighborhood centers, or churches as neighborhood centers. There's a number of churches that have buildings that are big enough to accommodate after-school programs and recreational activities, community meetings, and for years, some of those churches on their own were opening their doors to their neighborhoods. Now we're getting much more strategic, again, with the support and encouragement of the county and of our city government as well, to put these assets into play. So we have at least a dozen churches that I can count, and there are six or eight that are in a formal partnership with us to go after some funding from private foundations and other sources to really magnify the opportunity for churches to be open not just one night a week or on the weekends, but to be open all week long. One of our primary examples is Capitol Park Wesleyan Church, which is a teeny-weeny church about a stone's throw away here in the Capitol Park neighborhood. Highest crime neighborhood in Salem 5 years ago. Not anymore. One of the main reasons for that is this little church opened its building and then built a $500,000 community center. Tell me how a church of 125 people builds a $500,000 community center. They did it. They'll tell you faith and prayer was behind their success. I would agree. I would also say that a whole bunch of community partners working together also contributed to that success. Based on that model at Capitol Park Wesleyan, again, 8 to 12 other churches either have neighborhood centers or are developing neighborhood centers. Some would say it was coincidence. Others might say it was providence. In this morning's Statesman Journal, there was a nice editorial, not solicited by us. The newspaper just saw fit to do a supportive editorial on the fact that churches are stepping forward not only to open their buildings, but to also serve the schools. That's kind of our unofficial motto now is when we work with the churches to ask them to participate is either get down to the nearest school and ask how you can help, and many churches do that, or open your building and serve your neighborhood. And again, it's not just talking philosophy. We're a good 3 years into some real action here. I'm open for questions.
Sam, and I happen to be very much aware of the work that you're doing in Salem and in this community. How many other communities have the same kind of program or leadership that you provide to the to Marion County and working with the ecumenical community?
We're fortunate in Salem-Keizer, and I'm fortunate that there's an official entity like the Salem Leadership Foundation which exists to do this. In other communities, they may not have an exact organization like ours, but they do have leaders who comprehend the value of the faith community and people of goodwill working together. We're at the service of other communities to help. We can't do the work for them, but we're certainly available as sort of a consultant to help those leaders in those communities, whether they're government officials, church officials, school officials, or all of the above, who want to do that thing. So we're there to help facilitate and lend our expertise. Our primary emphasis is in Marion County.
I might also want to explain to the panel the church that Sam mentioned and the community that he mentioned in Salem was an area that the majority of citizens referred to it as the Felony Flats area. And it was the area that had a tremendous lot of problems, and to see the turnaround not only of the residents who live there, but what's happened in that church. And Sam invited me to one of their dedications and to watch the children and the adults, not just children, but their parents are also engaged and involved. And it says a lot for what happens when you're actively working within the community and bringing all the resources to bear. I just needed to add that in case any of the other members of this panel.
I purposely didn't use that term, and I don't mind, Madam Chair, that you did use that term, FF, that rhymes with Melanie Matz. That's because that term has been officially doinked and is no longer used in that neighborhood anymore. As it was part of the neighborhood revitalization that to call it that, and again, Madam Chair, I think it was appropriate so that people had context, but I'm famous for deputizing people all over the city for not using that term anymore because it's known as Capitol Park. The neighborhood is known as Capitol Park. Over in our neighborhood, I live in the north central neighborhood called Grant, the Grant Highland neighborhood, and we've replicated much of what's happened to the south of us, now to the north of us, and then similar replications. Again, whether a church opens its building or whether we get over to the nearest school, as in the example of Salem Alliance Church and Grant School, the partnership that's existed there for 10 years has been phenomenal in terms of mutual support and encouragement, and we're spawning new ideas and new assets every day.
Just thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
And you didn't have to pay. You're fine.
Oh, I was
ready.
Great. Thank you, Sam. The third person I'd like to invite to the table to give you a little snapshot of one other future and emerging area is a pastoral initiatives process that we're running through right now. Karina Lemons is leading this effort to capture the stories of some 20 faith communities in urban and rural Marion County to help affirm their efforts and integrate them further into the work of the commission and the commission into their support.
Welcome, Karina.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Karina Lemons, and I'm proud to be here on behalf of Marion County Children and Families. And I believe an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Say up front.
And up front.
There's room for more. From Washington, D.C. to right here in our own Oregon's capital, there is not only a heightened appreciation for what our faith communities are doing to support children and families, but we are seeing an enormous and firm commitment to see how that work can be expanded and supported, just as Sam talked with you about just recently. Here in Mount Marion County, there is an incredible strong advocacy for bringing together both the public sector and the faith communities for the common good. The faith community is a natural partner. They are already an organized system of support for families and children. By working together on social issues, we are reaching out to as well as tapping the resources of their organized and positive community influence. As it was discussed yesterday in a couple of the panel discussions, we are not just inviting the faith community to come to a few of our meetings. We are going and meeting them at their tables. As a system of support, different congregations are approaching this in a multitude of different ways. Some are further along than others. Some have had huge impacts. Some have even embraced some failures. But by researching and recording their stories, we hope to accomplish two things. First of all, we want to encourage and equip other congregations to do similar works. We want to do what Capital Wesleyan has done and support those churches that want to follow their lead. And secondly, we want to be able to report to the public officials and the community leaders the various ways in which these faith-based partnerships take form and the way that they work. The anthology of stories that we are researching and recording is already titled. It's called The Seeds of Wisdom and the Seeds of Woe. It's being sponsored by Marion County Children and Families Commission, the Family Systems Investment Consortium, and the Salem Leadership Foundation. Right now, we are now interviewing and meeting with over 30 different organizations from both the rural and urban areas of the county. In fact, we are now working with translators to reach the Slavic and non-English speaking churches. I can say, as one of the ones doing the research and meeting with these, the process has been rich. These congregations are full of passion for the human condition, and they have great hope on behalf of the other congregations as the barrier of collaboration and cooperations are dropping. I'm available for questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much, Karina.
You're welcome, Madam Chair.
You guys probably know that I'm very much proud of all of my Marion County preserves.
you know these people?
Sounds like an acronym to me.
And I want you to know I paid in advance the other day, too.
And we're proud of our senator.
But you should also know, those of you who have not visited Gilbert House, that one of the projects that Karina was involved with was to help to secure in this town the major fund drive in order to refurbish and to do all those wonderful things at Gilbert House. And Karina, we really appreciate all of your effort and work that you do on behalf of this community.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just in closing, we know that our major missions have to do with the Coordinated Comprehensive Plan, and as we go through the change that it bestows upon us, we are mobilizing community. We are working in partnership with them to build strong family systems. And for us, that is the future in Marion County. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you,
committee members.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, the last part of our presentation on futures is the work plan that you had in your packets yesterday, and I want to hold this up. There's a two-page work plan that was developed by all the state agencies and some that weren't signatories on the interagency agreement that I had yesterday in your packets. And so I just want to highlight what the state agencies are going to be doing. Obviously, you've seen what the communities are going to be doing with their community comprehensive planning and their future service delivery and supports in communities. The state agencies also have developed a work plan that they're going to be moving forward with in the 2003-2005 biennium. The first thing we're going to be doing is optimizing funding opportunities. We're going to look at every single way we can to maximize, coordinate the funding that we currently have through each state agency partner that goes down to communities, and make sure that we look at every way we can to support communities, even given these very difficult times. We're going to provide information on evidence-based research programs and services. The reason we're going to do that is to make sure that the services that are in communities have some research and support behind them, because as we all are aware, that resources are becoming very, very tight, and we really need to know what works. We're also going to be integrating other planning processes, bringing planning processes that aren't currently into the plan, asking for those to come and be integrated into the community comprehensive plan so we can continue to give a full picture of what communities look like in this state. We're also going to be looking at and trying to coordinate and identify data. One of the things we've heard over and over again from communities is we need you to be able to coordinate data so we can see a more complete picture about how we're doing. We're working on doing that, as I explained yesterday, with the early childhood piece of our business, and then we're going to try to expand from there. We're doing this with very little resource. We're just reconfiguring and reshaping, if you will, in order to get the best information we can out to communities. We're also going to be providing a review and a process in response to barriers. One of the other things we've heard from communities through this community comprehensive planning process is you need to get rid of the barriers. You need to coordinate. You need to coordinate your contracting. You need to coordinate your monitoring. You need to coordinate your evaluation. You need to coordinate and make simple what you're asking communities to feed back to you. And we are working most diligently on trying to make that happen. The Oregon Youth Authority, the Commission on Children and Families, and the Criminal Justice Commission are now coordinating all of our contract language. So when we send it out to counties, it all sounds the same. So the county council doesn't have to go through three different contracts with three different sets of information. We're going to be doing much more of that. Instead of monitoring these programs singularly, we're going to monitor them collectively. So they only have to have one monitoring visit rather than five monitoring visits. We're going to coordinate our evaluation process. So we evaluate systems rather than individual kinds of pieces so that people only have to see us once rather than five times. Those are the kinds of things we're working on doing in this particular system. We call it community comprehensive planning, but it's much more than just planning. It's looking at how we as a state system in partnership can do business differently, both at the state level and at the community level. And then we are going to do whatever we can to support local communities with technical assistance, training, anything they may need to be successful in their work at the local level. So that's our work plan, a fairly ambitious work plan, I might add, but one that every state partner that you saw sign that interagency agreement has agreed to do. And we agreed to do this, and we all said, what are we going to do with diminishing resources? And our answer and response was, we're going to stay the course.
Thank you. Is there any questions, Donna? If not, I'm going to close the information meeting on Senate Bill 555 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5507. Mm-hmm. And we have the State Commission on Children and Families, and Sheila will begin our orientation on 5507.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, you should have gotten in your offices yesterday morning, I believe, orientation and background information on the State Commission. I hope you had a chance to look at that. It's a pretty high-level summary to start out, and then there's some more detailed analysis that would have normally been in our printed analysis of the governor's budget, which hasn't yet been printed, but we're working on it. And this just goes over the agency's role, what the size of its budget is, the revenue sources, the budget drivers. In the interest of time, I don't want to walk you through it today because we've got about an hour left on the schedule. Tomorrow we'll get into public testimony, but I wanted to make sure that the agency has a chance to give you a good perspective on the budget before we get into that. If you do have questions, ask me, ask the commission, or the appropriate people as they come up. I will note that this is the second largest general fund agency in the human services budget area. DHS, of course, Department of Human Services, being the other one.
Are you keeping notes, Senator Carter?
So, and this agency has grown significantly over the past few years because the policy choice has been to invest in some prevention programs, particularly funding for the locals to determine how they want to use it according to their comprehensive plans, and then, of course, the expansion of the Healthy Start program, which at the end of this biennium is expected to be operative statewide. So you will see significant budget growth there. There is a reason for it. The agency will talk about that and talk about both the funding streams and the dedicated program resources that it has available to it. You've heard over the last day plus the last few minutes that the comprehensive planning piece on a broader scale. Now we'll get into the agency budget.
Samuel Henry, welcome.
Thank you, Senator. I'm very pleased to be here before this group. I am Antonia's daddy. Antonia is 11 years old. She lives in a bilingual household in Troutdale. She attends Walt Morey Middle School in the Reynolds School District. I go by other aliases. I'm Samuel Henry of 1186 Southwest 12th Court, Troutdale, Oregon. I'm a member of the Oregon Commission on Children and Families from November 2001 to the present. I've been a member of the Multnomah County Commission on Children and Families from December 1993 to the present. Part of what I'm doing is putting a face on these people that sit beside me and before you, and a face to community participation, and a face to the legislation that you have sponsored and the legislation that you continue to work with us in our communities on. I'm a face on the 8 to 10 hours per month and the 20 to 25 hours at special times several times during the year. I need to put a little context to this face. I began my civic participation as the 8-year-old son of a Pentecostal minister who started a program to feed struggling families in Washington, D.C. during the 1950s. I served in the Army Reserve and the Army National Guard, including 17 tours of riot duty in the streets of Washington, D.C. between 1967 and 71. I agreed to serve on the local and state commission because of the dedication to the wellness approach of H.R. 2001 and the ensuing community mobilization themes of SB 555. As you are well aware, the purpose of the commission system was set up in 1993 to support healthy communities, to mobilize and support planning and decision-making at the local level, to build collaborative partnerships among community groups, service providers, government, and individuals, to develop policies and standards of accountability, including performance measures, outcomes, and benchmarks. The State Commission has 16 members. It includes the Director of the Department of Human Services, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and an advisory member from each of the House and Senate, and 12 members appointed by the Governor. The local commissions themselves are found in each of Oregon's 36 counties. Members are appointed by the Board of County Commissioners. And, of course, the state agency, with the state commission staff supporting 36 county commissioners by providing information, facilitation, technical assistance, and evaluation. What I'd like to share with you are a couple of personal themes and corollaries that come from my almost 10 years of work on the Multnomah Commission and my year and a half of work with the State Commission. They are, and I guess I should have said at the start that in my day job I'm a professor. You probably might notice that in the way this gets organized, in addition to being Antonia's dad. Three themes and four corollaries. No, I'm not a math professor, but it helps. One is about leadership. Leadership is the call to our community, and it's the call for the support of us all. And I have footnotes here in case you really like that thing. I told you I am a professor. As John Rawls refers to in his well-known book, The Theory of Justice, most of our effort should go to those who have been the least enfranchised. And that, to me, is one of the reasons for putting those hours in and for doing the kinds of things we do. The corollary is that our work for communities in Oregon has been and must constantly strive to be more inclusive, even as our populations and economies shift and our social technologies aid us in seeing our previous blind spots. Theme two, community-enhancing accountability. All of our enterprises begin with communities, whether we're in education, law, health, social service, even business and commerce. The extent to which we are successful collectively and personally is how we respond to those communities. My corollary is that as we continue to make transparent and address the tensions that exist between the roles of state government and local government, our bottom line of joint accountability is the health of our multiple communities. My second corollary for that theme is we need to continue to support our past efforts and to find ways to make new ones that engage us in new partnerships and new patterns of involving public and private institutions, agencies, and organizations in response to the common good of our communities. This is always our accountability. This is always our bottom line. Three, we are on the right pathway. In tough times, the truly tough don't get nasty or become more selfish. There are some, even some who howl the loudest, and some of my neighbors are among them, who cry for a lifeboat approach and social triage. But that's not productive, and we know that, and we've learned that. So my corollary is, H.R. 2004 and SB 555 were headed in the right direction. The emphasis on preventative and resilient approaches has put us at the forefront in our nation. But we don't do it for bragging rights. We do it for our kids and for our families. To close off, let me say, last June, I was driving home from our commission meeting in Bend, and I stopped at the Warm Springs Museum gift shop, which just happens to be one of my favorite places. And I was looking for a present for one of my doctoral students who was celebrating the completion of his dissertation, and he gave real meaning to the word. We call it a dissertation defense, and sometimes it has Errol Flynn kind of connotations. It was a spirited defense, and I was proud of him. Dave Bullock is a proud fourth-generation Oregonian, already a leader in the field of technology and education, and tireless in his efforts to bring teachers and other community leaders to more effective ways of facilitating the education of young people. I wanted to find something for him, a special present, that would connect him with his past, his present, and his aspirations for the future. And I did find something in the form of a Native people's dream catcher. And since that time, I've thought a lot about the dream catcher, and I've come to believe that all of us, you and I, all of us as neighbors, are the dream catchers for our kids, for our young people, for our families in the state of Oregon. We're for all of them, the advanced placement high schoolers in Grants Pass, the preschool toddlers in Roseburg, the single female head of households in Tillamook, and the migrant workers in Madras. We endeavor to support and amplify the dream spirit of community and to hold back the nightmares of indifference. I thank you on behalf of Antonia for your continuing leadership, for being a part of Antonia's dream catcher, and I'm very, very proud that you've allowed me to be a part of that effort. Thank you.
We thank you.
Now you know why we asked Samuel to come today.
All of us want Samuel.
Senator Carter can't have him.
She's twisted my arm a few times.
Believe me.
Don, are you going to do the overview, or is Linda up next?
I think we will have Linda next, and then I'll go into the budget process, if that's all right.
Linda.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services, and I'm going to be going through this little handout on the budget summary for the governor's budget. It may not be nearly as inspiring. Okay, if you turn to page 2, you see the wall of numbers page with the history of funding. You can see the governor's budget for this agency is about $80 million total funds. $55 million of it is general funds, and about $24 million is other funds. This budget is about 5.5% higher than we ended this series of special sessions with, but most of that increase, as you can see, is in the other funds. The general fund is down actually $6 million from where we started the 0103 biennium. The most significant budget driver for this agency in terms of general fund has been the expansion of the Healthy Start program from back at the beginning of 99-01 biennium, serving only 12 counties, to now, by the end of this biennium, up to serving all 36 counties. Page 3 is a summary of the funding sources for the agency. You can see 69% general fund, 30% other funds, which is almost completely federal funds that are passed through.
Linda, could you comment on the 35% reduction in federal funds? Back on page 2.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, they're federal funds. In this biennium and current, there's just one small federal grant, the Positive Youth Development. I believe that in 99-01, it was federal grant money that is now showing in their budget as other funds. Is that correct? Oh, okay. Sean said that the National Court-Appointed Special Advocates funding was shown as federal funds in that biennium. It is now in their budget as other funds. So it isn't real.
So it's a fund. It's shift.
Right.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I assume that probably at a later time we'll have a breakdown of other funds for us and have a discussion of those.
Representative Bates, and I'll go here on page 3. Let me just mention briefly, like I said, almost all the other funds are federal funds coming from other agencies. The biggest four pieces is the Social Services Block Grant or Title 20 funding that's passed through from Department of Human Services. That's about $8 million in 0305. Another $2.7 million is from Safe and Stable Families, Title 4B, also passed over from Department of Human Services. The child care grant from Employment Department is about $5 million next biennium, and Medicaid Title 19 matching funds is about $6 million in this budget. And I know the agency has some specific revenue information where they'll talk a little bit more about each of those funding sources.
And then I do have a question, and since we're looking under every rock, whether the I do know in the case of like the relief nurseries, where they're required to have a 25% participation, and I think it's probably more like 40. Do we capture that for match in any way? Do you know, Donna?
Senator Winters, we don't capture it in this particular scenario. We do capture it in the leveraged funds.
Okay. Just want to make sure that we're not leaving any stone unturned.
No.
On to page four, an overview of the governor's budget, kind of from the high, big picture view. The budget is, like I said, a 5.6% increase from 0103 after fifth special session in total funds, with most of that increase coming in the other funds, which is the increase is mainly more Medicaid match funding. In the special sessions during the current biennium, we had about a $4 million reduction to Healthy Start, which was reduced from serving 80% of first birth families down to 65%. That was originally envisioned as a one-time cut, but as you'll see later in the program reductions, that became a permanent cut. There was another $3 million reductions in a variety of other programs, including several elements in the Oregon Children's Plan, the First Steps Program, Together for Children Program, Family Resource Centers, Crisis Nurseries, and some of the locally invested flexible funding streams. In the governor's budget, the Healthy Start continues at 65%, but $5 million of the funding to do that has been redirected from the more flexible funding streams. So, in essence, those have taken the reduction. In fact, looking at the general fund, flexible funding streams, that's about 25% below where we started on 0103. Programs reduced include the court-appointed special advocates, crisis nurseries, programs completely eliminated in 0305, that the list there, First Steps, Together for Children, Family Resource Centers, and several of the support and early identification pieces of the Oregon Children's Plan, the physician training, early childhood information hotline, and the One Call Centers.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't know when the appropriate time to ask questions, but correct me on some of these. We're looking at a situation where we're going to have a significant budget for shortfall, 0103 and 0305, and it's time to start discussing what some of these programs actually do on the ground and what they mean to the citizens of the state. And I'm not sure right now is the time to have that question, but when I see things like training for physicians has been eliminated, I'm wondering why it was there in the first place. But it's gone now and probably should be. There's other things that I'd like to ask questions about. What is the Healthy Start program actually doing right now? I've had a little touch of that in my practice, and so I asked that question wondering what is the program actually doing right now.
I think, Representative Bates, that they're providing us with the overview, and we start getting into the nuts and bolts of the budget. You can begin asking those questions, and that's how we're going to establish our priorities.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
On page five is shows the chart of the budget on by program units. You can see almost the entire budget is what they call the community development program unit. That includes funding that goes directly out to counties, as well as agency staff that work directly on programs. The 4% for policy and support includes statewide policy staff, as well as all the administrative support that does budget and accounting and those kind of functions in the agency. Page six shows the breakdown of the budget by budget category. You can see the huge bulk of their budget is special payments, which go directly out to counties. About 6% is personal services, another 6% is services and supplies, and there's a tiny little piece of capital outlay in there. On page 7, I have three slides here that basically show the building of the governor's budget. We started with an 0103 adopted budget of $83 million total funds, $61 million of which was general fund. Legislative actions through April, that's through the second special session, reduced $4 million general fund, and that $870,000 was the Medicaid match loss as a result of the general fund reduction. Most of that, what, $3.4 million, was the reduction to Healthy Start, which I'd already mentioned. Again, the legislature expected at that point that that would roll back up to 80% service level in 0305. There were also reductions to administration, the First Steps program, and those elements of the children's plan. Base budget adjustments is basically the personal services cost roll-ups. The main drivers of that are the past salary increases that are now being rolled up, the PERS rate increase, and the roll-up of past health benefit increases. Page 8 goes on. Then essential packages, the standard adjustments, generally speaking, for inflation in the state government service charges. There was a phase-in of almost $12 million. That would have been the cost to restore Healthy Start to an 80% level statewide, all 36 counties. We ended up cutting that, but it was originally put in to roll that forward. There's a phase out of the remaining funding in that First Steps program, and there were a number of small startup costs that were in the budget in the current biennium that were phased out. I wanted to note, this is what is not in the budget, but historically we have backfilled the shortfalls in the Title 20 funding. This biennium, it was $233,000. We did not backfill that this biennium.
Linda, would you explain what Title 20 is?
Madam Chair, Title 20, or Social Services Block Grant, is one of the federal funds that comes from Department of Human Services, and it's mostly used for the Youth Investment Program. Right. Then in the policy packages, Package 81 is
too bad it was an acronym. I'm not getting my organ food back. I'm not doing too good today.
Package 81 shows the 0305 effect of the third special session reduction. The main reduction there was elimination of one position, an administrative position. On the next page, Package 91 is where a number of reductions occurred. This is the roll-up of House Bill 5100 as a result of the ballot measure failing. It nets out to a reduction of $4.2 million general fund. It continues the reduced level of program in crisis nurseries and court-appointed special advocates and in the locally invested funding streams. The governor's budget does then add back half of the cut that was made to crisis nurseries. It also continues the reductions to the other programs completely eliminate the other pieces we've talked about. Package 092 then, additional program reductions, reduces the Healthy Start program. Initially, we reduced Healthy Start down to 50% service level. That removed the $11.7 million general fund. Essentially, we removed the entire phase in that we had added in the earlier package. Then we redirected about $5 million from the flexible funds so that Healthy Start ended up at 65%, but we still had the full $11 million reduction to the budget there. And finally, there are three regular policy packages in this budget. Package 425 supports substantive legislation, Senate Bill 143, to transfer the responsibility and resources for the Children's Ombudsman to the Governor's Advocacy Office in Department of Human Services. That office already administers the program, but we currently have the resources coming into the commission, and then we transfer money around and have interagency agreements. And this would move everything over. So that takes $378,000 out of their budget and transfers it along with the program. Package 430 basic capacity has no budget impact, but it creates the basic capacity grant stream to fund local administration, which in the past has been funded by taking pieces of each of the program funding dollars to run administration. This really came out of a budget note from last session, and I think the agency has some more information on that. And finally, Package 435, Agency Operations, adds one half-time limited duration position that whose focus would be on generating more grant funding. The idea is that this position would be able to generate enough resources to pay for itself and still be able to generate additional funding through grants. And that is the end of the summary.
Is there Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Since we're kind of talking about the governor's budget as an overall look down on it, as we go through this is going to be a new budget for me, and I'm going to take it all in stride and learn as we go through this process. But what will be helpful for me is to understand how the decision making occurred in terms of the reductions, and what processes were taken into consideration to make sure that we truly, truly tried to get as much money to the local level, and not just protecting a program. And then as we look at reductions, what will also be very, very important to me is to know that with any possible reductions, that there were also a process in place. There's a process in place to make sure that there was a reduction in paperwork and processing, because obviously we're going to be asking folks at the local level to be carrying the same burden, perhaps, with less money. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that's a fair expectation. And so, again, I will be learning as we go through this, but it's important to me to know that, one, we're doing everything we can to get as much money to the local level and not held within the state, and two, that we're reducing the burden on the local folks proportionally to the amount of money that we're perhaps would be taking away. Those are my thoughts. Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Linda.
I think we're Donna. Back on here. Well, I'm going to now go through our budget. And I'm please stop me at any time, because there's a number of places where I'm sure that there may be some questions. So I'm just going to go through the high-level information in this budget. Once again, as Samuel has discussed, he did very well talk about what our mandates are. We're the lead agency for the community comprehensive planning, and we're also the lead agency for the early child.
Are you working from this binder?
The white one?
Yeah. White binder.
The white binder.
The presentation document.
Presentation. Sorry about that.
Okay, what page are we on?
We're just going through Senator Smith, or Representative Smith, the mandates piece.
The mission. So you're starting from one.
Is on page 3.
Okay. Thank you.
Also, I'd like to introduce Sean Jacobson. She is our budget fiscal guru. So if you have budget questions, she's the person that will be able to answer those for you. So as you can see, under the tab for on page 3 are the mandates. And what we've done is we've just listed, there are a number of them, we've listed through the legislation the mandates for the State Commission on Children and Families for you to review. I'm not going to read all of them, but they're there for your review if you would like any part of those. The two main ones are the comprehensive community planning, which comes out of Senate Bill 555, and then House Bill 3659, which is the Oregon Children's Plan. And then other pieces of legislation have included the court-appointed special advocates, Healthy Start, and some of our supports for crisis relief nurseries, family centers, Together for Children were all part of the Senate Bill 555 legislation. Some of those programs were put into that legislation to make sure that those were all a part of how we do our commission and local business. So as we go through that, you'll see. So those mandates are just a listing from statute and where you could find them in statute.
It's helpful for this panel to know the mandates, because then when we start building the budget, we know what it is that this body did that you directed the commission to do.
So there you have a number of them.
Yeah.
And I want to go through then the agency structure a little bit more. Linda did describe a little bit of the agency structure, but we have a graph that shows the agency structure, and that's on page 21.
Page 10.
And talk about what Representative Smith asked. 88% of our resources go directly to communities, either for programs or for what we call community-invested funds, funds that are invested by local commissions in places in which their comprehensive plan has guided them. We have Healthy Start. We have the Crisis Relief Nurseries. All of these are at the community level, so I just want to let you know that particular piece. Court-appointed special advocates in all 36 counties is also at the community level. We have child care and development block grant money. Those are federal funds that come through the Employment Department to the Commission on Children and Families, and those all flow, for the most part, to the communities to improve the quality and quantity of child care in all 36 counties in the state. Then we have our locally invested funds, which are the funds that communities use to invest in those things that you've heard a lot of folks talk about yesterday and some today from Marion County. So those funds are according to the comprehensive plan. Those grant streams include, in those locally invested funds, the Great Start dollars. Those dollars are funds that have a best practice requirement, as well as service to the 0 to 8 year population. Some of our grant streams have either restrictions on ages or how they can be invested in the community. The other one is the locally invested youth investment grant streams. That's the Title 20 dollars that pass through from the Department of Human Services. They are for ages 10 to 18, and they are for at-risk youth in the older age limit of the spectrum in the communities. Again, these dollars go to the counties.
Chair Winters.
Thank
you, Chair. What's the definition of at-risk?
Chair Winters, Representative Smith. In our case, it's an identified what we call one risk or below. In other words, a behavioral problem, runaway, out of parental control, things that we determine through at the local level that put you right on the cusp of possibly going into the juvenile justice system or being placed in an abusive situation. So in other words, domestic violence would be an at-risk circumstance. A referral to the services to children and families but was not founded would be an at-risk, where children were at risk of being abused and neglected. Those would be those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then the last one is our locally invested safe and stable families grants. Those are also grants that are passed through from the Department of Human Services, and they are invested mostly in the community for early childhood services and supports. Most of our grant streams have a best practices requirement and an outcome requirement. Every grant stream that goes to communities are required to use best practices whenever possible, and also to make sure that they have outcome data to let us know how they're working in communities.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Cordley.
I wonder if we could go back to page 5 before we go further. Could you spend some time talking to us about the budget principles underlying the budget development?
Yes. Senator Gordley, that was part of my process here. Let me just find mine. I had them here so I could talk to you about them, and now let me see here. Where did I stick? Here we go. The State Commission on Children and Families approximately a year or so ago developed budget principles, and we developed those budget principles because we knew that in budget crises as well as in budget good times, we would need to have some core principles for which to distribute our resources or to decide on how not to distribute our resources. We developed these principles, and then we sent them out to all 36 counties and asked for their feedback. The State Commission was fully involved in helping develop these, but we wanted to make sure that the local communities also had an opportunity to review them and comment. And in some cases, we made changes because of that review. So they are, the foundation of the budget will be local coordinated comprehensive plans, with the funding of priorities to meet both local and statewide needs of children and families. In other words, what we've said all along is that the plan is what guides the community resource. And if the plans tell us, an example is, on almost all 36 of the plans, parenting was a very high priority in most of the plans. So if we were to get additional resources, as an example, at the state level, we would make sure that local communities had some support for their parenting opportunities that they've identified in the plan. So those would be those kinds of things. Targeting new and maintaining existing initiatives toward early childhood primary prevention activities. We really believe that starting as early as possible, and as you can see in our chart there, our prevention continuum, primary prevention and secondary prevention is where we would like to see most of our preventative resources and support. The next one is targeting new and maintaining existing locally invested fund resources to support the funding of identified strategies in the plan. That's where your locally invested funds are. We wanted to make sure that as much money was locally invested and went through the community plans and were developed by local commissions on children and families. One, to focus on building community supports and seeking funds to enhance community mobilization efforts for our children and families. Wanted to make sure that the things that you heard from Marion County, from Tillamook County, that we had folks in communities able to engage our communities of faith, our communities of color, our business communities. One of the things you heard, I think, from Marion County and from Tillamook, that Senator Winters had said yesterday about the fact that when we were all growing up, we had our neighbors and we had our folks who would come to us and say, hey, how would you like to do this today? Or how would you like to get engaged in those kinds of opportunities that neighborhoods afforded us? We don't have many of those folks anymore. So what local commissions do and local volunteers on commissions is they engage communities. We wanted to make sure that they could continue to do that. We also wanted to prioritize funding streams over state seed programs not intended for statewide rollout. One of the difficulties we have is when we do requests for proposals, how we make choices about who gets what resource when everybody is in dire need of a resource. And so we always try to look for resources in which all 36 of our counties can enjoy that resource. And there will be times when we will say, you know, we just can't go for a resource that only includes a couple of areas because it's not worth having sort of the haves and the have-nots. So we really try to look for statewide support for resources. And then we want to make sure that we collaborate with state and local partners to promote ways to make the best use of our limited resources. What you heard yesterday was beginning to look at a new way of doing business about coordinating resources, making sure we reduce barriers, as Representative Smith has asked, less monitoring, less paperwork, one form for four or five different opportunities rather than five forms for five opportunities. We're working very hard to coordinate. So it won't be just the commission resources that are coordinated, but our other partners will use the same form and have less paperwork overall.
Donna, I'm going to, because I know we have individuals who've come a long way to speak and talk to us. So I'm going to have you have your presentation on Thursday, completed on Thursday, because tomorrow we have another full agenda, because I do want to hear from individuals who have traveled a long distance to be with us. And I'm going to ask the members of this panel to make sure you take your book to your office and that you begin digesting some of the information that's in here so that when we meet back on Thursday, you can have your questions, and I think we can flow a little more expeditiously. Didn't want to cut you off, but I do. I've always wanted, you know, it's policy here that when citizens come a long way to share with us their information, that we take every opportunity that we can to make certain that they're being heard. So I will take the next part of the agenda, which is the local commissions and community partners, and ask them to provide us with their information. And then, Donna, we will get back to you on Thursday if that's agreeable to everybody. Okay.
So Peg van der Zanden is the first person to come and speak to you today. She's from Wallowa County. And we had scheduled this so we could answer some of the questions, particularly Representative Bates asked about Healthy Start. And so what you'll hear today, if we get to it, if not Thursday, about what Healthy Start does. And Peg is going to talk to you about what the community locally invested funds do and what community local commissions do as part of the budget.
Chair Winters.
Representative Smith.
I apologize, but I truly owe an apology. I came in and I saw you sitting there, and I knew your face looked familiar. Welcome to the Capitol.
Thank you.
I apologize. Thank you, Chair Winters.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, my name is Peg van der Zanden, and as I learned from Samuel Henry a little bit ago, I'm going to change my introduction. I am the mother of Jonathan, 21, Joshua, 19, and Jacob, 15, and the wife of Mark van der Zanden. We reside in Wallowa County, and I'm the director to the Commission on Children and Families. The purpose of our local work is to improve the well-being of children, youth, and families through planning for more effective services, to develop efficient systems, and mobilize our communities. Our work is much like the work that some of you have had in prior professions. As a doctor, you examine. We examine, too. We examine the community. We look towards certain indicators to try to discover what the problems are and how they might be able to be solved. We draw from research and information to guide our steps. We then take action. And again, monitor certain indicators to make sure our desired course of action is bringing about the desired results. As in business, we seek to understand the community's needs. We listen and watch. We develop our product accordingly and the promotion of that product accordingly. We package it. We market it. And then we seek others who might be willing to make a common investment toward that cause. We also monitor the results and adapt that product accordingly. We seek to expand the supply and the demand. Like the school administrator, we work to serve all, understanding the importance of well-being as it relates to one's ability to learn and thrive. We look to our community for assets and supports. We work to pool those resources and develop additional resources. We utilize innovativeness, but we keep in mind best practice and methods that bring about desired results. And then again, we measure that effectiveness. As a matter of fact, our work is much like the work that you do here as legislators. We seek understanding in order to make good, sound decisions on appropriate courses of action based on the needs of our communities. We recognize the importance of pooling resources and stretching the dollars. We value work across multiple systems in order for better efficiency. We also value the importance of early years for lifelong development and well-being, and recognize that children need support throughout their lives as they grow toward adulthood. We agree that investments need to be made on initiatives and programs that bring about desired results. And we appreciate the desire for accountability. So the Local Commission on Children and Families has a lot in common with the backgrounds of several of you and as you, as legislators. Willoughby County has benefited from local invested dollars, and I wanted to share with you a few examples of that. In 1995, Ben Boswell, our County Board of Commissioner, directed the Commission on Children and Families to develop an early childhood committee, much before the mandate to do that occurred. And his particular focus of interest was readiness to learn. A variety of partners came to the table. In Willoughby County, that's 20 people that provide services for children from the ages of 0 to 8. And they talked about how they could improve a child's ability to learn and came up with some strategies. I'm proud to say that in the year 2002, our readiness to learn scores have improved by 12%. But unfortunately, we're still 10% under the state average. So we still have more work to do. One of the programs that was developed out of that effort was called Training Wheels. And originally, it was a program that delivered books to children wherever children were. That program has expanded and is now based on a state model with research base. It has story times, lap reads, where caregivers can bring their children and sit their children on their laps to read. There are several components where child care providers, because primarily the care in Willoughby County for children is in-home care, are educated on developmentally appropriate practices. And in fact, a storyteller rotates from home to home, giving an example for child caregivers as well as an opportunity for children to learn throughout several sites within Willoughby County. The program has been one of the programs that's been supported through commission dollars. $143,000 has been dedicated toward this program since 1995. And the key point that I wanted to make here is that we have leveraged the state dollars for a total of $438,000. So for every dollar the state put in, we added $4 for the return. Without the original seed money for local investment, we would not have had the opportunity to leverage the dollars the way that we have. Our readiness to learn scores are improving. Our scores on developmental screenings that we offer all children 0 to 5 are improving. Our parent satisfaction survey results show a high percentage of comfort in the child care provider and the care being delivered in the in-home child cares. Our child care providers have increased their knowledge of developmentally appropriate practices and increased their usage of supports that are offered. Interesting partnerships have formed in this particular program. We have a garbage service delivery truck that delivers books to an outlying area of Troy, a mile away or an hour away from the Willoughby County Library location. The money that's being saved by not having postage mail those books back and forth to the Troy school is buying more books. Willoughby County is pretty notorious for making ends meet and figuring out what to do with scraps. That's just one example of innovativeness. The commission has supported efforts toward the reduction of domestic violence. In 1995, our Safe Harbors, which is our domestic violence provider, had a bank account of $15. The commission was one of the original investors in Safe Harbors. Today, They operate on an annual budget of $150,000, employ 5 people, provide access to a 24-hour shelter care, 24-hour crisis line. They assist walk-ins, offer educational programs, conduct a men's batterers program, and advocate for victims' rights. They have leveraged $600,000 on a $54,000 investment. So for every 50 cents the state put in, there was a $6 return, with over 25,000 hours clocked in volunteer time. Safe Harbors leads the state in innovative best practice approaches and has brought domestic violence out of the closet. We probably wouldn't be where we're at today if we hadn't been able to invest commission dollars. The state money was the seed money for this successful effort. Another successful effort in Wallowa County that's just beginning to blossom is our Building Healthy Families program, and that's our parenting program promoting the family stability and resiliency through the integration of services. We've invested $66,612 since 1999. Seed money from the state has given us the opportunity to write a grant to the Ford Family Foundation and be the recipient of $181,000 for 3 years to increase the services offered to the people of our community. Families are responding. Parenting classes are happening. We have in-home visiting. We have one-on-one consultations. There's really an explosion of new opportunities for parents, and our children are benefiting. In Wallowa County, there are several responsibilities of the commission director, and one of those primarily is to convene processes for planning. I facilitate the Juvenile Crime Prevention Steering Committee, where over the past years we've seen a 20% reduction in juvenile recidivism rates due to careful planning and the development of programs. The service integration meeting is a meeting that has come out of our comprehensive planning process, where we're working towards streamlining services when families have multiple need multiple providers to help them. Products like common intake forms and interagency referral forms have been the result of that effort. The Wallowa County Commission on Children and Families, staff and board participate in multiple processes in a variety of disciplines, and they're listed on the testimony that I've offered for you to see. We are the eyes and the ears of the community. We provide a voice for advocacy for our children's issues as well as youth and family issues. We mobilize the community toward positive outcomes for children, youth, and families. We're like the glue. We hold things together. We piecemeal things together to make services that will have effective results. This would never have been possible without the locally invested funds that have come from the state to our local communities to help us move our planning efforts forward. I'm here to ask for continued support for local funding. Are there any questions?
Yeah. I'm going to ask that the other presenters, because we do have your written testimony, that you, so that we can hear from everyone, that you give us a summary, and I will ask that legislators make sure that they read your written testimony along with the others, because if we don't, we're not going to get through today. And Donna, I would, because I know that you have two from Salem, that maybe you want to take them out of order so that we hear from Deschutes. I hate to continue to do this for Marion County, but they're here. It takes them not that long to get back home where others have driven hundreds of miles. So,
thank you.
Madam Chair, you're exactly right that you must be reading my mind. The next person up is Judy Stegler from Deschutes County. She is the director of the Deschutes County Court-Appointed Special Advocate.
And I'm going to start out, because I'm nothing but one giant acronym, so here's
$20. Okay.
Just to set the tone here.
Okay, good.
I can't get through the testimony without...
Put your name on our list.
Thank you. I hope it's a good list.
It is.
A good list.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Judy Stigler. I'm the program director for the Deschutes County Court-Appointed Special Advocate, or CASA program. And I will refer to it as a CASA program because if I have to say the full name, I run out of steam. I am a recovering empty nester, so, just to put it in perspective here.
I understand.
Yes, that's good. But I wanted to give you a brief sort of overview of who I am so that you can understand why the CASA program is so important. I'm an attorney by profession. I was a practicing attorney in private practice in the family and juvenile law area for 18 years. I have been a member of the local Ben Lapine School Board. I'm currently serving still on the State Board of Education. I served as a juvenile court referee in Deschutes County for a few years, and my passion has always been children and families. After taking a brief sabbatical in 1997, the position in Deschutes County came open, and I jumped at the opportunity, and they were gracious enough to hire me on as the program director. A lot of my colleagues in the legal profession scratch their heads and say, why would you want to do something like that? The very reason I want to do something like this is because it is a program which directly impacts abused and neglected children who are the most vulnerable citizens in this state and in this nation. Federal and state law mandates that every abused and neglected child who becomes part of the juvenile justice system have an advocate. We are the answer to that mandate, and we do it in a very cost-effective, very, very effective manner. Who are CASA volunteers? They are ordinary, or what I like to refer to, extraordinary citizens. They are men and women from all walks of life, all professions, all broad ranges of interest, all age groups, who are trained a minimum of about 36 hours. It varies from county to county, but they are trained to understand and know the juvenile system, to understand the child welfare system, and they are trained on how to advocate most effectively for these abused and neglected children. What they do, quite succinctly, is to represent the best interests of the child or the children that they are advocating for in the child welfare system. There is nobody else in the system that works solely for and looks solely after the best interests of the child. They are the only person. We'd like to think that everybody involved in the child welfare system has only the best interests of the child at heart, and I think that that's probably true, but most of the rest of the participants have some other aspect that they have to balance out, such as the rights of the parent. So this is the only person involved in the process who solely is focused on the child. How does the CASA concept or CASA programs fulfill the commission's mission? Quite frankly, we are citizen-based. We are all about intervention and prevention. We are all about systems integration. We get the system to communicate across the board. One of our charges by state law, state mandate, is that we monitor court orders, that we negotiate, facilitate conversations between the various parties involved in the child welfare system. And we are all about building healthy communities. What do CASAs add to the child welfare process? Well, in 2001, we had 1,139 volunteers in this state serving 3,494 children who donated conservatively over 105,000 hours in service to the children of this state. But beyond that, way beyond that, what these volunteers are all about is holding the system accountable. It is the CASA volunteer who nags the DHS representative about resources, who reminds the court that the last time that we were in court on this case, that the court said A, B, and C was going to happen, who reminds the attorneys to go talk to their clients. Have you discussed this plan with your client? It's the CASA volunteer who holds the system accountable, and they do it in a very cost-effective, very dollar-efficient manner. for free. You know, there is no other probably investment of state dollars that leverages so much in the way of service. If you look at the national average, from the National Cost Association, they estimate that the average volunteer hourly rate is $55 an hour. You translate that times the 105,000 hours. The important part of state funding is this is the core of every single program. Now, obviously, the bigger the program, the less a percentage of that program the state funding is. But to a lot of our smaller programs, and I'll remind you that there's a program in each and every county in this state, to a lot of our smaller programs, it far exceeds the 29% that is the state average, the state portion. There are some local smaller programs that it is in excess of 50% of their budget. So when the dollars are taken away, the very viability of that program to succeed, it's staff intensive. Primarily the only dollars, the dollars go towards staff, towards training of volunteers, but you have to have staff to monitor and supervise the volunteers. It doesn't happen otherwise. I'd like to close my remarks by drawing from a quote from Winston Churchill, and it's one of my favorite quotes. He often said that when the eagles are silent, parrots will jabber. Now, I don't know who the parrots are, and I'm not even going to venture in that direction. But I know who the eagles are. The eagles are our children. And we as the caretakers of this thing we call the child welfare system, what we owe to them is the opportunity to fulfill their potential. We owe to them their voice, their hope, and to ensure that their potential is not limited by their circumstances. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to speak to you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Judy, for your testimony. I know that Representative Bates, some of the members have to go to the additional committee, and he wanted to make sure he stayed because he said you're one of his favorite programs.
I appreciate that.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, thank you. I try to judge programs where the rubber meets the road as much as I possibly can, and I've actually gone back and checked up on CASA a few times and found out that several very salient things. One, it is the only program I can find that follows these kids linearly. In other words, these kids get passed from agency to agency and social worker to social worker, and after a few years end up not even paying attention to them. But the volunteer worker who is not getting paid for the job is the only one that follows the kids over a long period of time, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, as he works through the court system in this terrible environment they're in at home. Mm. And they become the only ones that seem to really care about these kids and put a face to these kids. And it really was saddened to me when we cut that program in the last biennium. And the ripple effect of that is so intense because all you're doing with that small amount of money is training people. And when I look at a $60 million budget, of which you guys are 2%, I question where we're making our cuts at. So I'll finish with that.
I appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you for your time, Madam Chair. I apologize. I have another committee to go to. I apologize for leaving.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bates.
And just so that members in the audience know that members are leaving not because they don't appreciate
I didn't drive them away.
Here. You did not drive them away. That at 3 o'clock some of them have to go to another committee. And so I just wanted you to know that we appreciate your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Winters, where would you like to go next? We have.
Let's go to Lynn County.
Lynn County.
He's taking a
Lynn County.
Oh, well, then we is Lynn County here?
Yes, I am.
Judy?
Yes.
Okay.
Judy is here from Lynn County. And Representative Bates is leaving now that we're doing Healthy Start. I just thought I would mention that as he is on the way out.
He will read her testimony carefully. So,
okay.
And if you would summarize for us, I would appreciate it very much.
I will. I'll try to go to the important pieces of my testimony. Chair,
Senator Winters and Senators and Representatives. My name is Judy Trainer, and I coordinate Healthy Start of Linn County. As far as the discipline, I am a nurse and have worked in the community for the past 20 years, and I'm here as coordinator of Healthy Start of Linn County. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today to share how Healthy Start of Linn County, as a collaborative community initiative, works to support families of infants and young children. I'm excited and proud to talk about the collaboration we have created and about our work in Linn County. Healthy Start of Linn County began serving families on April 10th of 1995, we have served or touched about 3,200 families in that time. We believe that the family is the child's first teacher, and that the family is best supported, nurtured, and served through the commitment and collaboration of the entire community in which we live, with the family joining all of us as partners. The Healthy Start model is a research-based prevention model to support parents and to promote healthy, thriving children who are loved and well-parented and who are ready to learn as they enter kindergarten. It is a model that supports strong, nurturing families and healthy, thriving children and works to prevent poor outcomes early. Outcomes like women who have late prenatal care and child abuse neglect, childhood illness, poor nutrition, and stressed parent-child interactions. We work to break negative cycles of family that families might have. I'm going to skip to a little bit about our history and then move on to our collaborative role. One of the things I wanted to show you in my handout, if you wanted to take a quick picture or get a quick picture of what Healthy Start does, I keep this very close to my desk because we work in three parts and we have been pilot projects since the get-go, working to support the efforts of the commission in making our communities healthy. So we work with families, we work with organizations, and we work with communities. We were a second wave of Healthy Start pilot projects. We began planning for 2 years before our proposal was submitted with about 200 community people as part of that process. We had the benefit of collaborative training, and about 100 people worked with us in that process, training, and they were from the hospitals, schools, state and local health and social services, parents of young children, the faith community, service organizations, community college, university, and university extension offices. The decisions were made to build on existing successful programs like the Babies First and Cocoon program, early intervention, and the Family Resource Department at LBCC. The Healthy Start County Commission was a catalyst and provided leadership through this whole process. We work as an interdisciplinary team and a collaborative in planning and leadership. We have worked successfully as a collaborative initiative for 8+ years and have been able to have an impact on families because our commitment and our determination to work together, recognizing that no one organization or group has all the answers to a family's needs. The family support model we developed included an emphasis on collaborative leadership and coordination to prevent duplication. I'll talk now about service delivery. Services are voluntary. A family chooses to participate in Healthy Start. Families are introduced to Healthy Start by their medical home, by a WIC nutrition educator, a hospital nurse, the faith community, high school teachers, and an involved neighbor or friend. Families are offered Healthy Start services and screening prenatally or shortly after the birth of their first baby. Expressed written consent is obtained from the family before we connect with them about the next steps that they will take in the Healthy Start program. Families with new babies who have the usual needs of a first-time parent are offered one or two visits by a community volunteer who provides a basic welcome baby home visit with a gift from the community, some information, and the offer of support. Families with new babies who have characteristics that indicate the need for more support are offered a welcome baby visit also and are invited to participate in a family interview to determine their additional needs. If eligible, families are offered intensive home visit services. Some families with new babies in intensive service may also be offered and engaged in different levels of expertise: medical, alcohol and drug treatment, mental health, early intervention for special developmental problems or delays, and in different frequencies of home visit practice. Some receive weekly visits, others monthly. Coordinated and integrated services, starting with the family's medical home, community hospital, WIC, maternity case management, we try to provide the best fit for the families we serve, blending services with Healthy Start. I guess what I'll talk about now is future directions.
I'm getting a signal from someone. After I finish. Not while I'm in hearing, but when I finish my hearing, I can talk to you.
Go ahead. Thank you. Future directions would be that we would go proceed ahead watching our evaluation that guides us so that we are providing high-quality service to families and working with each family with the passion and motivation that many of us have had as we began vital work as a parent and as the first teacher of our children.
I'm sure one of the questions that Senator Representative Bates wanted to ask, because it's a question that a lot of legislators have asked. When we passed the legislation, there was some real concern as to assure, one, that the program was voluntary, two, that there were not inappropriate interventions or intrusions in the lives of families.
Right.
And you've had 8 years in this program. Can you provide us, you don't have to do it today, but can you provide us with, you know, that kind of information? Because I think that's what this panel wants to look at.
Absolutely.
And number two, what are some of the outcomes? And she's there's a packet, I think we already have it answered, that we're going to receive. You just,
absolutely,
they anticipate my question.
Mm-hmm.
So
here's the report.
So I will share those with the rest of the members.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
And to make sure that they read it and they do get the outcome information. And I certainly thank you for coming and sharing with us of what's going on in Linn County.
Thank you.
For those of all of those, except for those who are chronological advantage, are still here. But it's similar to what was the visiting nurses program, except with some additional components add to it.
Yes, it is. It has the partnership of the nurses and the social supports, which are the social, the non-medical, but the social issues around families as well.
Okay.
Do you want to continue on with this?
Can we have Dan and Sue to both come up at the same time? And then we'll have Marion, not unless Dan, is Dan still, he's still here?
How about that?
Ruth is your chair? We'll have Ruth come up.
Ruth? We'll start out with Sue Miller, who's going to talk about relief nurseries, and then they're going to talk about child care. So they're two separate.
They're
things.
Two separate?
Right.
And Sue, if you could give us some quick summaries, because I understand you're going to be back tomorrow.
Yes, other relief nursery representatives will also be here. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And I will be very brief. We've prepared three handouts for you to try to give you an idea of where relief nurseries fit in the overall system of services for young, very vulnerable children in our state. And this yellow chart is actually taken from a report that the State Commission funded with an outside consultant to explain where are the nurseries in the system. And as you can see from that, basically we have on the left Healthy Start, Head Start, WIC, and some of those agencies that do identify and refer some of the
they identify the risks in families, and then they refer the highest risk families into the system for the level of service that they need. Relief nurseries are sitting right in the middle there, and as the target clients indicate at the bottom, basically we are sent the highest risk families that these agencies are identifying. So it's definitely a partnership. If you end up over on the far right side of this chart, you'll see what happens if we aren't all successful in intervening early enough and the children either have to be removed from their homes, they get into the correction system or whatever. I know Senator Winters knows that the county sheriff in Marion County refers to our relief nursery as a crime prevention program because he knows that that's where it starts. So it is part of the continuum. Going on to the next sheet, obviously trying to be pretty brief here. If you look at the bottom of this sheet, we've tried to give you a couple of our outcomes, but at the bottom, it lists some of the risk factors that the families we work with have. We as nurseries actually track 46 risk factors, and part of the problem our families deal with is that most of them average between 15 and 20 risk factors. So it's not that they're just living in poverty or they just have mental health problems, but they have a whole barrage of issues to deal with, which is what makes them such high-risk families. And this is just taken from it's a snapshot of a very defined population in the Roseburg Nursery, and we just offer it as a quick example of where families start at intake with the risk factors, and that after about a year of being in the Roseburg program, because that was the evaluation period the consultant was looking at, you can see that there's been significant improvement in many of those risk factors. And we just wanted to show you those so that you'd see the kinds of issues that our families are dealing with. At the top of that sheet are two of our outcomes that we wanted to make sure you're aware of, and you'll hear more about tomorrow from the consultant. One is that the abuse rate for children who are enrolled in our programs is just a little lower than the state average of abuse rates for children in these age groups, 0 to 6. And while half a percentage point may not look very significant when you realize how many risk factors the families are dealing with, it's really quite remarkable that it is even close to the statewide average, much less lower. The second outcome is the foster care one. We work really hard to keep families together. That's a core part of our mission by supporting their parents. And as this indicates, only 1% of the children enrolled in our programs had to be placed in foster care. And in fact, all 5 of those kids represented by that 1% were returned to their family within that year. So we do have an impact on those programs, or on those families. The blue sheet just lists the different programs that we offer. The top part are the core programs. They're part of the model of being a relief nursery, so all 7 of us in the state provide those. The support services listed at the bottom vary. Some programs have all of them, some have most of them, and some of the newer ones don't have very many of them at all yet. But as you know, you have funded 2 new ones in the last session, so we have some pretty new programs as well as older ones. And I just mentioned one final thing, and you'll hear more about this tomorrow, but you've been talking about leveraging of funds. And for relief nurseries in the current biennium, you've invested, well, over $3 million, depending on where you put the cuts, about $3.5 million. And we nurseries have raised $8.5 million in our local communities to support the work that we do. So there's no doubt, just as you've heard from other programs, your investment in us enables us to leverage private funds that we can then invest in these children and families. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you very much, Sue. And again, I encourage members to attend. If you haven't received their invitation, it should be in your basket. We're invited to visit Building Blocks on the 12th.
Yes, tomorrow night at
tomorrow
6
night.
O'clock. And all 7 relief nurseries mm-hmm. will have representatives there.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to understand your one-year analysis of the Roseburg Relief Nursery families. Unemployment, underemployed. You had 92% of the population was unemployed at intake. And then the second assessment is that 22% were unemployed.
How
do I read that?
Yes, that's correct. Or underemployed.
So on the alcohol and drug abuse, 76% were at intake and zero?
There was no improvement. In that one, they don't have a drug and alcohol program at Roseburg, so there was no improvement from
the... So that's a 22% improvement.
Yes.
It isn't a...
Oh, I'm sorry, okay. Senator. I see your question. 22% had improved. It wasn't down to 22%.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Ruth? I should have called this Marion County Day.
Senator Winters, they're handy.
This is a copy of the chart.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, thank you all for staying to hear this report that we're about to bring to you. My name is Ruth Hewitt, and I am the chair of Marion County's commission, and you can see from the reports you've had before you today really what a privilege it is to chair that commission, who has done so much work with partners, and the last one you heard is just one more example of the work that we do. The program that we will present to you now has to do with child care, and we know that's been a very important issue for all of you that serve in the legislature. It's also an important issue for Oregonians who receive it. They worry about the child care, they worry about the cost, its stability, and the reliability of the care that they receive. And this program covers six major counties that have the largest population, and the hope of the program is that they'll be able to show some improvement along these areas. We believe that it's effective, it's economically efficient, it also serves children with disabilities and those who have greater needs in care. And rather than for me to spend a lot of time with that so that you really can hear from the staff person, I'm going to have Frieda Ryan Anser, who is also one of our partners from the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments, talk to you about the program because she is also the staff to the steering committee. Thank you.
Chair Winters, committee members, my name is Frieda Ryan Anser. And as Ruth mentioned, I'll very quickly run over what this grant covers. I believe this was federal funds that came through the State Commission, and there was a competitive request for proposals process last fall. And the way that the proposals were divided up, there were grants available and for small, medium, and large counties. And Carol Weyer, who is the director of the Washington County Children and Families Commission, suggested to the six large counties who would be competing against each other for these grant funds to instead join together in a collaborative effort and apply together and then share the funds to improve child care quality in all six of these large counties. As Ruth mentioned, the population in these counties account for 65% of children in the state. List the six participating counties. They included Clackamas, Jackson, Lane, Marion, Multnomah, and Washington counties. In addition to the Children and Families Commissions in each of those counties, the local child care resource and referral agencies are also participating in this project, which includes a child care information service for Marion County, the Metro Child Care Resource and Referral Agency, which covers Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties, and Lane Family Connections, which is Lane County, and the Job Council in Jackson County. When we were developing the proposal for this grant, the six counties identified four key areas that were affecting child care quality in their counties. First of all, all counties had noted a high turnover rate of child care providers due to low wages and lack of benefits. The reason why this is important is because research shows that it's very important for young children to have a consistent child care provider in their lives. And if they don't, then it has a negative impact on their brain development. Other areas that they identified as problem areas for child care involved lack of available care for infants and toddlers, lack of available care for children with special needs, and special needs being could include mental or behavioral issues, physical handicaps, or other such items. They also identified a lack of available care for children from families who do not speak English. The strategy that these six counties came up with to address these problems is illustrated on this chart that I have provided. First of all, there's a wage enhancement pilot project that is being conducted by Lane, Marion, and Jackson counties. The goal is to increase retention of child care providers by providing wage enhancements and also to promote training by providing scholarships. All of these three counties are implementing programs that are based on national models that have shown to increase child care worker retention. In the metro area, the Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties will be doing a benefit enhancements pilot project, which will involve helping child care providers obtain benefits such as health insurance and auto insurance and homeowners insurance. Finally, there's a shared training piece, which will involve an inventory of existing training and resources in each of the participating counties. We will then identify gaps and possibilities for shared training within the counties and possibly develop new curriculum and resources for training. This is an example of a project that can be shared statewide if other counties want to participate in this shared training piece. Finally, under the shared training piece, we'll publicize available trainings and resources to child care providers. Many times child care providers are unaware of materials that are available. For example, the State Commission provides child care materials that are in Russian, Spanish, and English. Finally, that we will be also doing a compensation survey as part of this grant. This is a small piece, but it will provide us some vital information about how much child care professionals are making in terms of wages and benefits. We will also be trying to obtain information on what makes them stay in the field and how we can help promote that. As you'll note on your chart, there's a steering committee. I'm staffing that steering committee. All of the participating counties are participating in that committee, and we meet once a month to coordinate all of these components to the grant. Overall, it's anticipated that this grant will directly impact 1,500 providers, 7,500 infants, 18,000 preschoolers, and 14,000 school-aged children. That includes the six counties. We anticipate an even greater impact statewide as we share the information that we gather through this project. And I'll take any questions.
I thank you very much. As you notice that I'm losing all my members, they all have to go someplace else. And typically we're out of here by 3 because of their other committees. But I do want to thank you for your testimony, and we will continue this discussion tomorrow at 1 p.m. And with that, we are adjourned, not unless Ms. Baker has anything else.
Just a reminder, tomorrow is scheduled for public testimony, so we will have a sign-up sheet and people will be testifying. The actual budget discussion presentation from the agency will start again on Thursday.
Okay. We are adjourned.